Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dhena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah.
It's a great honor to be here at this center in Naperville. This was a devotee center that was meant to be. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has desired that Krishna consciousness be spread to every town and village in the world, and this is a very strategic place because it's in the middle of America, and from the center many things get done. Just like in India, Naimasaranya's forest is the center of the universe. It's the universe organized as a hub and a wheel, and the very hub of that wheel, which is the universe, is Naimasaranya. As you may know, the Earth planet is in the very middle of the planetary systems. Om Bhur Bhuvah Svah Tat Savitur. There are progressive planetary systems up and then downward. And the planet Earth, part of Bhumandala, is right in the middle. In fact, this is where the door is to get out of the building. You don't get out from the upper floors. So if you go to the heavenly planets, to Swarga, you still have to come back down to this place in order to exit. This is the place where tapasya takes place. And if you're down in the lower planetary systems, you have to rise up to come to this plane. So manushya, the human beings who are born here on this Bhumandala and this earthly area, are very fortunate. Our lifestyle is not, we don't have extreme opulence here. The best you get is what you see around you right now. It doesn't, you know, people try to go to Hawaii, but it's still a little disturbing over there. It's not like you get heaven on earth. And you also, it's not so hellish, although you do see hellish scenes all over the earth. So you get a little bit of both, a tiny bit of heaven, tiny bit of hell. But for the most part, we're right in the middle region. And there's a reason for that, specifically human life, the kind of life we have right now. We're souls, but we're within a body that is provided to us by material nature naturally. But it's a great win for the soul to come into this body. Labham sudurlabham idam bahusam bhavante manusha martadam anityam apihadira. The Shastra says it is extremely rare to get this opportunity to be a human being. And it's a temporary life, very temporary. We're hanging by a thread from the time we're born, really. But it's extremely valuable because you can make great advancement in this life. So all the Shastras and the great Acharyas and the incarnations, the avatars of God, all say the same thing, and they're talking really to us. Because you can't talk to animals, they don't listen. But human beings can listen. It's hard also for the beings in higher planetary systems to listen, because if you had a bank account, what is your name, sir? No, you. Raj? Raj, if you had $1 trillion in your bank account, and you were guaranteed that you were going to live for 5 billion years, would you take spiritual life very seriously? Be honest. But if you have a little bit of a scope that, you know, anything can happen at any time, my lifetime, my, you know, span of life is about 100 years, maybe a little less, and you can kind of see that, you know, this is an urgent situation. So it's anityam, it's temporary, but it's artadam, it's extremely valuable. And if anyone takes advantage of it in this lifetime, like you're doing, then they can make a complete success of life in this very short span of life. So the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is solely meant for this purpose. There are a lot of agencies you can go to, which are very important, that help you take care of your finances. Some take care of your health. That's a big topic these days, health care. And it's important. You have to have that to have some balance in life. But there are not that many departments that give very clear knowledge about how to make a complete success of the human form of life. Most people don't even realize the value of it. And many people don't realize also that the human body is just a vehicle, and that we're souls riding around in that vehicle. There are spiritual traditions that teach so many things, and not many of them also give a clear conception of the Supreme. The Supreme is the ultimate concept is the personality of Godhead, Krishna. that from whom everything else emanates is a person. And that's why we see form and personality within the universe, because it's an emanation from a person. He also has aspects of impersonality, because the complete whole has to have both personality and impersonality to be complete. So he's the complete whole. But that information is not readily available except through the Vedas. In the Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, which is the condensed Vedic wisdom, actually Bhagavad Gita is the Vedic intelligence given to us directly by Krishna. Anybody who reads Bhagavad Gita will be spiritually intelligent. And anyone who reads the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the postgraduate study of the Bhagavad Gita, and which is necessary for one to come to a relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In fact, in the Bhagavatam it is said, Pravishtakarna Ranreina Swanam Bhavam Saroruham. By hearing Srimad Bhagavatam repeatedly, one naturally realizes one's personal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. That's how powerful the hearing process is for human beings. Therefore, this movement is a movement simply to bring happiness and good adjustment to human society. That's what it's here for. And the great sages have already very carefully studied the entire situation and come to the conclusion that there's reality and non-reality. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna even mentions this. He says, Nasato vidite bhavo, napavo vidite sita, ubayorapi drishtontas tvanayos tattvadarshi bihi. That the tattvadarshis, those who have seen the truth, know that there's substance and non-substance. The non-substance is what I imagine to be my life situation. I'm seeing that I'm born as a child, and then I'm growing up, and so many things are happening. I have so many anxieties and hopes. Does anybody have any anxieties and hopes? Please say yes. Yeah, these are called your life situation. There's a lot of situations going on in one's life, but that has nothing to do with your actual life. Your life is you. You're the Atma, the soul. The person behind the life situation, and your life situation more or less is like watching a movie. It's a projection on a screen. Which screen? The screen of the mind. So a Krishna consciousness is tangible yoga. It's a process by which one can actually come to realize one's real self in relationship with the Supreme Self and make a complete success of the human form of life following the tradition laid down by the scriptures themselves, which are unassailable, they're axiomatic truth, and by the great sages who have tested the Shastra by dedicating their entire lives to them and thus showing how they're viable in our own lives. Therefore, we can come to a point of having complete confidence in these sources of knowledge, and when we do and follow them carefully, then we'll notice for ourselves that our lives are becoming well-adjusted, that we're getting perspective in life so that we can avoid the great anxiety of becoming over-entangled in material life, and that we also gain knowledge naturally. And the real definition of knowledge is to know the difference between the body and the self. Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita, Kshetrajnam chapi mam vidhi sarva kshetri shubharata kshetra kshetrajnayo jnanam yatach jnanam atambama. He says, my opinion is that knowledge means those who have come to see the difference between their self and the physical body. Therefore, the greatest cause of all in this world, and I would say that every human being would like to work for some cause. We're cause-driven. We need some cause to work towards in order to feel valuable in life and to be valuable. We are servants by nature. And we'd like to do the best service that we possibly can. And there are hundreds, actually thousands or millions of good causes in the world. But according to the Vedic scripture and the authorities like Srila Vyasadeva, there's one great cause. And that is to give people an opportunity to realize their higher self by giving them the information that comes from the spiritual world. That is the Vedic information. And of all Vedic information, Srila Jiva Goswami, the greatest of the scholars in Vaishnavism in the world, arguably, has written a treatise, the Satsandarbha. And in the Satsandarbha, which opens with the Tattva Sandarbha, he shows that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the mature fruit of all Vedic wisdom. There it's the original Shruti. You all know the Shruti, right? You've memorized it all, the Yajurveda, have you? Atharva Veda, you've memorized it? What about C++? Java? Yeah, that. Actually, in your culture, and I'm speaking to you as coming from Bharat, the reason you can memorize all these things is because these are your samskars. Your forefathers memorized the Vedas. They started at a young age as children, and they learned the Vedic knowledge, and they were able to pass it down to many generations. You have it in you to learn all these things. It's part of you. It's in your DNA, practically. So this is nothing new to you. You don't lack capacity at all. It's just that the only thing that's missing nowadays is just availability and the impetus to actually learn the Vedic scriptures and to understand the progression of Vedic scriptures. The Vedas are there, but practically they're unavailable to us in this age because they're very cryptic and hard to understand. They're vast, and they require also a lifestyle that it is not available in this age. You have to grow up in a Gurukula and be celibate and have complete isolation to develop the finer tissues of the brain to come to this point. And after the Vedas, there's the Upanishads, which are a little enigmatic. It's hard for many people to understand the Upanishads. The Upanishads sound like they're saying, we are God. But actually what they're saying is, if you want to understand God, look at yourself, because you're a small sample of God. And if you want to see the most amazing thing in this world, look at yourself, because you're a part of the Supreme. And there's nothing like consciousness in the world. Take a minute here and look at somebody's eyes, if you dare. Do you dare? Go ahead. Try it. Look at somebody right in the eyes and see what happens. Come on. Work with me now. Turn. Look. Is anybody looking back? Who was that? That's amazing. It's actually amazing. Consciousness is amazing. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Ascharyavat pashyati kashyarenam, Ascharyavat vadati tathaiva chanya. Some see it as amazing, some hear it as amazing. Some, after studying the whole thing, can't understand the soul at all because it's the most amazing thing in this world. Cars are not amazing, house is not amazing, all the material manifestations are not that amazing as the soul is. And so that soul is described in the Upanishads. And then Srila Vyasadeva, who is our well-wisher, compiles a series of sutras called the Vedanta Sutra specifically to give us a summary of what it says in the Upanishads so that we can assimilate it. But that's actually meant for postgraduate students. Like if I go into a class on molecular biology, there will be all these terse little codes that I'll have no idea what they mean. I just think this is meaningless to me. So for most people, the Vedanta Sutra has no meaning. It's very hard to understand what Vyasadeva wrote, because he's actually writing for the topmost sages who look at it and go, oh, okay, I get it. Just like a PhD, look at, oh, I understand what that professor was saying, right? So he unpacked the Vedanta Sutra for the people in this age who are very busy and don't have time to live a life of celibacy and complete isolation to understand all these things and come to this position. And that comes out in the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the natural commentary, is the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Vedanta Sutra. It explains what it all means. And this was inspired. Srila Vyasadeva wrote it after he was inspired by his spiritual master. Who was that? Narada. Srila Vyasadeva was in great anxiety. He didn't know why he was in anxiety after compiling all the Vedas, the Upanishads, and even part of in the many Puranas. He couldn't tell why he was still unhappy. He hadn't done his duty fully. So he met with his guru, and he said, please tell me, what's the deficiency in me? And his guru told him, you haven't completely described the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the spiritual world in such a way that people in this age can understand it and enter into a relationship with the Supreme. Without that, the Bhagavatam says, Yene ravindaksha vimuktamaninas tvayasta bhavat avashuddha buddhaya, that every kind of liberation one may attain in this life that doesn't have a connection, that doesn't include my connection in a relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead is something that I'll slip from, because it's not relatable to me in an eternal way. Therefore, his spiritual master, Srila Vyasadeva's spiritual master, Narada Muni, said, you have to explain this more deliberately and explicitly. So he wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam. And in the Bhagavatam, he gives a very clear explanation of our relationship with this material world, which, interestingly enough, is not substantial. I consider it substantial, and I lose sleep over the various ways in which I relate with this world. Have you ever lost any sleep regarding your relationship with the material world? For instance, like how much money you have or don't have. Does that ring a bell? Or any physical condition you might be facing? Possible? Or is it just me? Yes? Yeah, all those things are meant to be overcome in the human form of life, and they can be done so by entering into a higher transcendental knowledge, which is offered in the first 9 cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we get the complete explanation of the activities in the spiritual world, including the relationship that Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the divine source of everything, has with his loving eternal devotees. And by hearing those pastimes, one can actually develop a desire to develop one's relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is the essence of the process of bhakti. This is mentioned by one of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's great disciples, Srila Rupa Goswami. Tannama rupa charitari sukirtananu smrityo kramena rasana manasinyoja tishtam vraje tananuragi jananugami kalam nayed akilam itupadesha saram. He says the essence of all advice for practicing bhakti is that one should organize one's life so that one can hear the Srimad Bhagavatam regularly and chant the Lord's names. And if you just do that regularly, then you will come to a point of developing your eternal relationship with Krishna. You'll know everything. You'll come to know everything just by hearing. And Krishna says the same thing in the Bhagavad Gita. I'm making this preface to my presentation today to make the case that the highest welfare work for the people of the world and the best that I can do for myself and my family is to organize my life in such a way that I can hear regularly from the Srimad Bhagavatam. There is no better medicine. This is mentioned in Bhagavatam, that anarto pasanam sakshat bhakti yoga manahoksaje lokasya ajanato vidmams chakre satvata samhitam. That Srila Vyasadeva knew what problems we would have right here in Naperville in our own lives. He could foresee that. He's a great sage. And he could also see what the solution is. And the solution isn't working harder. You don't solve problems by working harder, do you? Has anybody solved all the problems of life by working harder? A few people, I guess, have, huh? No? But you solve it by taking in the spiritual vibration of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This lifts one above the fray of the material world and gives one an opportunity to experience real happiness in life, inward happiness. This is where it comes from. So, what is the tradition of literature in the world? First, I'd like to establish this principle, the importance of literature, because our International Society for Krishna Consciousness is based on its literature. This is our foundational point. If we didn't have the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Sri Upanishad, the Bhagavad Gita, all the books that we hold so dear for reading ourselves and distributing for others, we would really be an organization without any direction or rudder, and we would have very little to offer the world. So, in the history of the world, books have been adored. Human beings like knowledge. We're knowledge seekers because we're part of Krishna, and we have this chit shakti, this impetus for knowledge. If you'll notice on any bus, train, or airplane that you get on, people have their noses buried in a newspaper, a book, or an iPad. and they're taking in some codes that are written on there in the form of language. And they take the trouble to learn these languages, which are written in code, so that they can get this kind of information, don't they? And they can do it too. Kids just learn language because God has equipped them in such a way. So what is the future of the book in this world? Some people say that the book, paper books, might go away, but industry experts say that it's not going away. 2014, publishers had forecasted that the sales of print books will remain steady. It's not that the digital revolution is taking over the book industry. And as recently as 2016, the New York Times gave this report about how paper books are increasing and thriving, whereas the e-books are not thriving. They're not moving up very rapidly like we thought they might. Of course, we have nothing against electronic books. We also advocate that. That's another tangible way to take in spiritual knowledge. But just for the sake of quelling anyone's fear that books are leaving human society anytime soon, I like to include these couple of slides. What are books? May I have a book in my hand? It'll make me feel better. It calms me down. Especially if it's not my book. Give me a Bhagavad Gita or a Srimad Bhagavatam. One that's open. Oh, here we go. Here's a book. Would you all agree? Is this a book? Okay, nothing up my sleeve. I have a book here. All right, so what is a book anyway? I mean, there's a lot of observations I have about books. Reading books is interesting because pages are really thin. I mean, you might think, like, how am I actually going to get through a book? Because I have to turn all these pages, and they're really small. I can't go through. But it's amazing how if you methodically go through and turn each page and look at what's on the page, you enrich your life. And lo and behold, as you continue to turn the pages, you actually get through the whole book. It's possible to get from here to here. Agreed? Okay, that makes me feel better. But what are they? Let's look at it like in an objective way. Books are containers. What do they have inside? And why do people bother to write things in books, to create a book? It's got a form substance, it's got a little spine on it, and it holds together, and it's all written in codes. Because they want to share the ideas that are within. And the ideas that are within books are idea seeds. They are seeds. And the seeds go into the ears, they go through the eyes, and they enter within the hearts of those who read them, and then they grow, and they have an effect on the individual and on human society in general. And why is that? Well, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Atma, the soul, that's who we are, is described as a particular category of energy. That category of energy is also described in the Vishnu Purana. Vishnu Shakti Para Prokta Shetra Gyakya Tatapara Avidya Karma Samyangya Tritya Shakti Rishite. The Vishnu Purana says there, God has three major energies. One energy is the spiritual energy in the spiritual world. Another is the external energy, which is the manifestation of Durga, this material world, which is a real pain, actually. And if you look at Durga, she's got a trident, and she's riding on a tigress, and she's poking people, and one of them is me, and it doesn't feel good. And then there's a third energy, which is called the Tatasta, and that's the soul, who's part and parcel of God and can reside either in the spiritual energy or the material energy. Now, we have volition, we have free will, and I like to say that the soul is always open to suggestion. Please repeat. The soul is? Yeah, and we find this all the time. Why do you think people advertise? They put up big signs. They'll say, drink Coca-Cola. And what is the advertising campaign for Coca-Cola presently? It says, open a bottle of happiness. Now, you're all way above average intelligence. You're the cream of the crop. So let me ask you, is Coca-Cola a bottle of happiness? I'm very glad to hear that. What is it, actually? It's sugar water with a little flavoring, a little caffeine inside. It's not really a bottle of happiness. But do people buy Coca-Cola? Every continent of the world, people, there's big trucks pulling up to buildings, unloading tons of gallons, oceans of Coca-Cola. Little Jiva's drinking it everywhere. Why? Little Jiva walked along and saw a sign that says, Coca-Cola, open up a bottle of happiness. And because little Jiva is? You got to work with me on this, the rest of these slides. Little Jiva is? He looks and he says, a bottle of happiness? Yeah, sure, I'll get that. And he stops on the way home and brings it back. And everyone's like, what'd you get there, Dad? And it's like, a bottle of happiness. And then little Jiva pops the top open. He hears a little fizz sound. And he's thinking, wow, maybe it's in there. And every cell in his body is saying, don't put that in here. You're crazy. And he goes, no, I saw it on the sign. Glunk, 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 glunk. And, you know, in a decade or two, his teeth fall out and he starts looking all wrinkly. Was it a bottle of happiness? No. But from one item of information to another that's offered to me here in the material world, I search for a resting place. I search for an object of satisfaction. I search for some elixir that I can drink, that I can take in, that will actually make me happy. And I'm open to suggestion in that way. And therefore, all over the world, people write books. They put up signs, and they try to influence little Jivas, either individually or en masse, to take up a particular suggestion. One of the ways in history that this has been done is through printing. You'll see on this left side some samples of early scrolls. These were written on palm leaves, and they're the way that they're written is with a stylus, is a metal stylus with a semi-sharp edge. And the scribe who would write these scrolls impresses the stylus upon the palm leaf, which you see there, and then places it in the sun. And after some time, the place that has been impressed makes that dark color. And do you see the artistry of those letters? And now, some of these scrolls, can you imagine taking time out from your busy schedule to copy the Bhagavad Gita by hand? How long do you think it would take? Raj, how long do you think it would take? How much? Quite a while? No, give me a number. How long would it take you? You have to call in and say, look, I'm going to copy Bhagavad Gita by hand. I can't come in for how long? 6 months? Raj? I'm only going, whatever Raj says. Raj, 6 months? 6 to 8 months, he's going to call his boss, say, get one Bhagavad Gita out, I got to copy it, right? Okay, so that's a lot of work to get one book. But humans like books so much that for centuries, they wrote things like that. They copied it on the palm leaves. Even Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he found the Brahma Samhita in Adi Keshava Temple in South India, he had it copied multiple times by scribes. In fact, a scholar I know who studies ancient scriptures told me that many of these scribes didn't know how to read or write. They just knew how to copy things. And so they'd sit there all day long and just copy these scriptures and make them available to people. And there were only a limited amount of these scriptures available to people. You can't just copy it electronically, which seems inconceivable to us nowadays, doesn't it? So, some centuries ago, a European developed a printing press, a movable type, a man named Gutenberg, who said, we need more people who understand the Bible in the world. So he invented a mechanical way to print books through movable type, and he invented what's today called the Gutenberg Press, where he could print multiple Bibles at the same time. Some of these are still on display in museums around the world. You can go look at them. They're works of art. And after him, the Royal Bible Society started inventing better technology so that they could print them faster. And as the Bible started going out around the world, people started taking up Christianity wholesale by coming in contact with these scriptures more and more. So, how do books transform the world? Well, I just mentioned the Bible and the way it got printed. How about anybody here heard of evolution? Who here has heard of evolution? Raise your hand. Theory of evolution. Only like 5 people. Okay, who here hasn't heard of the theory of evolution? Okay, 2 people. But he's looking it up on Google right now. So, actually, everywhere you go, people naturally assume that everybody knows about evolution. In fact, many books that you'll pick up, sociological books, self-help books, people will say, well, you know, we have an innate nature because we evolved from cavemen, and they just assume a priori that everyone accepts evolution, and most people do. Let me ask you a second question. How many people here have heard of the book Origin of the Species by Charles Darwin? Okay, how many of you have a copy in your car? How about at home on the nightstand? How many anywhere in your house? 1. How many have ever, like, read this book? 1. Are you a PhD scholar? Scientist? Kind of, yes. So, anywhere you go, you can ask people in any country if they've heard of the theory of evolution, and they will say, yes, I have. If you ask people how many have read The Origin of the Species by Charles Darwin, you'll get 1 person out of 200, maybe less than that, wherever you go. How does that happen? How did the theory of evolution become so widespread? It was written down in a book. And the book, which is a... Work with me now. A book is a... Container. What does it have inside? Idea seeds. And when those containers go out in the world, the idea seeds spill out into people's minds and hearts, and they grow there. And ideologies take root in various parts of the world, first in people's minds and hearts, and then it becomes a collective understanding of the way things are. So all over the world, people believe in evolution. It was organized, the thoughts were organized first in a book and then made available, and now this is a pervading ideology. There are other economic systems in the world that people simply, actually they'll fight and die for, because they say it has to be like this or it has to be like that. Where do those various ideas come from? They come from books. One example is The Wealth of Nature, which was a transformative book in the world of economics. Here's a historical fact. Fidel Castro, who was a revolutionary, started his revolutionary career in earnest when he was in prison. He was jailed because he was a revolutionary, and he had one failed coup attempt. Actually, it was an attack on the government. So he's put in jail for a long period of time. But while he was there, he wrote down his theories for social reform on paper, and he did so using lime juice. What is your name? Yes. No, behind him. You. What? Pradu, have you ever written anything on paper in lime juice? Do you know what happens when you write something on lime juice, on paper? It's invisible. But when you take it outside and you put it in the sun, then you can read it again. That's pretty sneaky, right? So what he did was write down his ideas. This is according to the BBC's production, a historical production of the history of Fidel Castro. The papers that he was writing were smuggled out of the prison by his then fiance Mitra, who would come in and apparently take out these blank papers, reconstitute them, put them together in little booklets, and distribute them. By the time he came out of prison, the society was ready for revolution, according to historians. How about the United States of America? How did we get to where we are now? How did we break away from the British crown? Say revolution. How did that start? According to historians, again, it was a pamphlet. In fact, this booklet called Common Sense by Thomas Paine is still, per capita, the best-selling booklet of all time. He sold these books in the colonies And practically everybody bought them and everybody read them at the time, per capita, the best-selling book of all time. And this book instilled in people a desire to break away from the crowd, gave them the courage, it galvanized them, and they rose up and there was a revolution. And the historians all point to this book as being the force behind the revolution. So what we have, our organization is based on the principle called sampradaya. Everyone say sampradaya. The word actually means to give a gift, to bequeath something. And what is it that's being given from Krishna all the way down through the great saints who form a chain of disciplic succession? What is that gift? Let's have a look at it. First of all, I mentioned Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the founder of the modern Hare Krishna movement over 500 years ago. And he was very much fond of books. He took the trouble to copy the Brahma Samhita, the Krishna Karanamrita, and he instilled in all of his disciples, primarily who are the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, the importance of literature in society. And he induced them to write multiple books explaining the process of bhakti for the world. Now, have you ever seen this picture? If you haven't seen this picture, raise your hand. Okay, what this picture shows is Lord Krishna in the spiritual world at the top playing his flute. And the flute song is represented by that kind of, looks like a wave coming down into the ear holes of Lord Brahma, who's sitting on top of a lotus flower. Because at the beginning of creation, Brahma is born from the lotus that arises from the navel of Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And when he goes into meditation and prays for Krishna's help, Krishna then plays his flute. And the flute song comes into the ears of Brahma. And he hears it as Omkar. And then from that vibration, which is the seed vibration of the Vedas, then he's able to manifest the sounds of the Vedas, which are the source of liberation. Anavriti Shabda, liberation by sound. So the original sound vibration comes from the spiritual world. So this picture is from the beginning of creation. But I have a question for you. Is there anything anachronistic about this picture? Anything out of place since this is the beginning of creation? It's not the lotus. The lotus comes from Garbhadakshay Vishnu, yes? He's holding a book. Were there any print shops back then? No. The reason he's holding a book is because our sampradaya, our line, is known as the sampradaya of the book. Because the book represents the gift that we're passing down. Sampradaya, again, means to bequeath something, to give a gift, to pass down a gift. What is that gift? It's the gift of transcendental knowledge by which we become perfected and we overcome all the problems in life. That's what he's holding in his hand. That's what it represents. Now, let me show you some of the great acharyas who are in the line coming from Brahma. Are you ready? Now, I need you to work with me. And when you recognize the answer to my question, I need you to say it all together. So, what is Srila Vyasadeva writing? A book. Just say book or books. But you all have to say it together with a little more force. Yes. He's writing books. These are the Vedas he's writing. Okay? And who is that? What is he holding in his hand? A little more force, please. Thank you. Who is that? What is he kneeling before and writing and reading? Correct. Who is this? By the way, what's he writing there? Correct. Who is this? Yeah, what are they holding in their hands and what are they famous for writing? Correct. How about who's that? Oh, I just noticed something. What's he posing with? Oh, yeah, correct. Okay, who is this? What is he posing with? Correct. And who is that? Oh, yeah, what's he posing with? I see a pattern emerging here. We are known as the Sampradaya of the book. And all the great acharyas distinguish themselves by bringing these literatures to the world with the aim of letting these containers go out into human society. Do they have an effect? I've already proved that they do. These are containers that hold idea seeds. When they go into people's homes, into their lives, they read them, the ideas go into their minds and hearts. Obviously, when the field is more fertile, the seeds grow more rapidly. For instance, in the former Soviet Union, when Srila Prabhupada went there for a few days, practically by a miracle, they brought in one Bhagavad Gita, because it's punishable by death, bringing in those kinds of books. It was at that time. But somehow or other, actually, Malati, the husband of Shyamasundara, the wife of Shyamasundara, threw a Bhagavad Gita into his suitcase before he went to Soviet Union. That was a little risky. Somehow or other, he got through customs. And when Prabhupada met some of the Russians there, he handed over the Bhagavad Gita, and that was copied by hand many times. People consumed that book, and the ideas of Bhagavad Gita then started to spread all over Russia, all over Soviet Union. And later on, underground, they were being printed. And now there are tens of thousands of Vaishnavas, Russian Vaishnavas. And according to the modern-day leaders in the ISKCON society who were there at the time, this all evolved because of the seeds that came from these containers, which we call books. So these books lead to an improved society, and if one takes advantage of them for oneself, one becomes elevated in spiritual knowledge. Therefore, we say that the distribution of literature is the great cause, and it is also a high sadhana. It's a practice that one can take up in one's life to be part of the sampradaya, and therefore come to higher realization through the austerity that it takes to make these books available to the human society. Srila Prabhupada brought with him to America a box of books, nothing else. And look what you can do with a box of books. This is the opening of the temple, Krishna Balaram, in Vrindavan in 1975. And from there, one temple after another grew up, and now there are over 500 all over the world. And these all grew from Srila Prabhupada's pen. So these books that you see here, just above Prabhas Prabhu, who's pointing them out, he's pointing to them. This Srimad Bhagavatam is it's the great fruit of the Krishna consciousness movement. It's a great fruit of the Vedas, and it's our primary means of sharing the greatest gift with the world. Therefore, it's the perfect gift. Right now, we're building a grand temple in Mayapur. How is it being built? All the temples around the world in the early days came up because of the distribution of books, because Prabhupada set up a book trust, and every time one of his books would sell, 50% of the profit would go into building temples. So the grand temples that you see all over India, including the TOVP, which you see here, is near its final stages of construction, is coming primarily from the money coming from book distribution. So reading these transcendental literatures gives one higher association. And the world nowadays is really tired of conflict and wars with no end. But in our organization, we're advocating weapons of mass instruction, not weapons of mass destruction. So we have a special program that we're doing here in ISKCON Naperville. It's an organization called Go Matsya. For those who advocate the preservation of Vedic culture, and our motto is preservation through mass distribution and education. Today, we went all over Naperville, and we went door to door, and we met people. And 10 people took a full sets of Srimad Bhagavatam in their home. We just went to their doors and we said, you know, we have an idea, and that is that the problems of life can be solved from a higher platform of spiritual knowledge. And if you take this into your heart, if you take this into your home, it will help. And they heard our message, and they took them. And they accepted, and they set them up on their bookshelves. And they started reading them to their children, and reading them themselves. Just today, 10 sets of Srimad Bhagavatam. And this was the great plan of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, that we would build a mansion of books. Our society would be built on books. And that we would benefit society by making these books available to people all over the world. So those are a few opening remarks to my lecture. And now I'll just take a couple of reflections. Anything that you heard so far that's stuck in your mind. A reflection just means any idea or concept that you heard that resonated with you, that can reflect back. It can be just a word or a sentence, something brief. Please go ahead.
I really like how you put that books are idea seats. That's like really stuck with me.
Yeah, books are containers and they hold idea seeds and they go out into the world, they spill out, and they have their effect. It's a tangible method of changing the world. Humans have depended on books since time immemorial. What else? Nirkula? You'll get the mic here within 7 seconds or less, or your money back from this assembly today.
We are the sampradaya of the book.
We are the sampradaya of the book, yes. So feel free to indulge yourself in these books and to make them as gifts to others. What else? Yes.
I liked how you shared the history of how the books came from different
how books founded various ideologies in the world, how they took root because of that?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Deepti in the middle.
Soul is always open for suggestions.
That's right. The tatastha jiva means open to suggestion. Now, all the time people change their mind because they get more information. So if you get information from the spiritual world, you can change your mind about staying in the material world and suffering. Yes.
Krishna Maharaj, I like the way how you demonstrated that although the Darwin theory or the popular books that caused the revolution are not actually read by common people, but those theories stuck in.
Yes.
So it is imperative that although not everybody may read these spiritual books, but it is imperative that they be distributed so that these ideas get spilled into common people through their...
Thank you for remembering that. Yes, very good. And so this set of books that you see here, this is the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's 12 cantos and it's 18 volumes. And today when we went around to people, we recommended that they take these books and keep them in their home as a means for preserving the Vedic culture. As it's enshrined within the books themselves. They can take advantage of it in their own homes, and that they can also teach it to others. And also, because the books are in many places all over the world, it will ensure that the Vedic sound, the Srimad Bhagavatam, is preserved over time. No matter how many geological changes there are, political changes, when the books are widely spread throughout society, it will preserve this very important culture for the world. So we have these boxes of books, and over the next several weeks, we're putting a focus on this because there's an important day coming up on September 5th. It's called Bhadra Purnima. Bhadra Purnima, as is mentioned on this flyer, is the full moon day in Bhadra. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said, and I quote directly from scripture, If on the full moon day of the month of Bhadra, one places Srimad Bhagavatam on a golden throne and gives it as a gift, he will attain the supreme transcendental destination. That's also mentioned in one of the oldest scriptures of the world called the Kurma Purana. So these sets of books are $250. They're normally a lot more than that, but the idea of this community is to get out as many as they can. And I was just speaking to some people door to door today. There was a young man there that just had twins. And I said to him, when he was thinking about it, I said, listen, whatever $250 you have right now is going to slip out of your hands one way or the other. For instance, how might it slip out of his hands? Parking ticket? What else? Diapers? What else? Huh? Tablet, yeah. I mean, he may buy some things and people might take it away. You know, Uncle Dilip may call him up and say, listen, I need $250 right now and I know you have it, you know, pass it over. And what can you say? He's like, all right, Uncle Dilip, I'll give you the money. You know, one way or another, everybody here knows money goes away. Guess what? You don't get any credit for that. Because it goes away from everybody. Lakshmi leaves everybody eventually. However, if you preemptively give it away for the highest cause, which I've just shown here, then you get eternal credit. That's called street smarts. You figure out where to preemptively give your wealth so that you get eternal credit. And this is one of the places that's mentioned in Scripture. So we advocate, for the sake of preserving Vedic culture, take a full set of Bhagavatams and put it in your home, enshrine it there, and read it, worship it. And every object that we have in our life, according to Vastu, has a particular influence on us. Every chair, every vase, every way that arches are made in our house has an effect on our consciousness. This is Vedic science. And the Srimad Bhagavatam apparently is a physical object. It's actually eternality meeting the temporal world. And there it has its influence. It's a spiritual object. And when you keep that spiritual object in your home, it has a powerful spiritual influence. You may not see it with your eyes, but you'll experience it in your life. Just like Wi-Fi, you don't see it, but you know it's working. So we just ask everybody, I'm just visiting here from California. I have no vested interest in this other than the fact that I would like to see the world to be a better place. And that I know all of you, I recognize you, I know you. I know who you are. You come from a higher culture. I said it before, you're the cream of the crop of the world. And the Shastra says it too. And so you should have this. You should take it. You should worship it. Set the example. Keep it in your house. Worship it. And when you do, you'll be part of a movement to preserve Vedic culture just by keeping it. And you can also recommend other people to take it. And by referring other people and recommending that they join this program called Go Matsya. Matsya is the one, the avatar of Krishna who saved the Vedas. So this is our campaign within the next, for Bhadra. And the Go Matsya is an ongoing program. It'll be going on forever. I think we're finished now because it's 6:30. Is that correct? 6:30, we're done? Then, pardon me? Okay. Does anybody have any questions? Okay, I have a question for you. how can we help you carry this to your car? We have some strong young people here who will carry your set to your car. Just take at least one set, put it in your home, and the devotees, if you like, will come over and also do a little puja to install it in your house. Thank you very much.
Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman. Hey, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.